The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
Hey, I appreciate you being here. By the way, hold the calls here for right now. We will have some open phone time, about 20 minutes. But I wanted to make sure and talk with Dr. Edward Gear. Dr. Edward Gear, interesting cat here. He's the author of Unavoidably Unsafe, Childhood Vaccines Reconsidered, a graduate of Yale with honors, Duke in medical school, Duke University Medical School, residency at emergency medicine at UCLA, board certified, maintains a private medical practice. Dr. Gear has served as an associate clinical professor of medicine and surgery at the University of California, San Francisco. In other words, Doctor, I guess we will just have to classify you as an underachiever. Welcome to the program. Good to have you on. Welcome.
Nice to be with you today, Bill.
Okay.
Thanks.
And now, of course, you know I'm teasing about the underachiever part, that's for sure. But let us have – I wanted to talk with you a little bit about there's been a kind of a bubbling underneath the news about what's going on with childhood vaccines, and then they connected then – with the measles outbreak that has been happening near the southern border here over the last few weeks. And, you know, some people have died under this. And do you have a basic take on that overall, what might be driving some of this? Because when I was growing up, measles was something that we just all got, and then you got over it. And I don't even know if there was a measles vaccine available when I was a little boy. I don't know, you know, at this point. But what do you think about that?
Well, specifically, the measles vaccine came in 1963, so I suspect it was available.
Maybe I did get it. I don't know.
But that said, I think you asked me what's happening. What's happening is that Kennedy has been named the HHS physician. I think all of this is politically driven over coverage of a common disease. By common, I mean, even though there's probably 90% plus coverage for measles, in terms of measles vaccines in this country, there are periodic outbreaks that can number in the thousands and are often in the hundreds from year to year. So there's nothing unusual about having a measles outbreak. In fact, measles outbreaks are quite common among heavily vaccinated populations.
Now, that would seem to go against the purpose of being heavily vaccinated. What do you think drives that, Dr. Gear?
Well, first of all, not everybody who gets the measles vaccine is protected. So there's really no such thing as herd immunity in that there always are going to be people who aren't covered, even if they've received the measles vaccine. Secondly, most people don't realize this, but 15 to 20 years in, and sometimes as few as 10 years in, you lose your immunity, your protective immunity to measles, so that people who got the shots as a kid, they're turning into 20s and 30s, and they can get measles now when they're older.
Oh.
And it's much more serious when you're older. Either you're very young or you're older, measles is a much more serious disease, as is mumps, by the way. So, and both of them lose protection over time. This particular, the people point to is this unfortunate case of a Mennonite child, a six-year-old girl who died in Texas. She was one of five children. The other four got measles, did fine. She was actually recovering from measles and ended up dying of a bacterial pneumonia. She did not die from measles. However, because she had had measles, and measles can, as can any viral illness, increase your susceptibility to bacterial infections. It does wallop your immune system for a while. It does make you more vulnerable, regardless of age.
So she was knocked down low because of the measles and then ended up getting the pneumonia is what happened.
That's right. And she was, unfortunately, she was mistreated. She got the wrong antibiotics for her because they detected she probably had a pneumonia, but they treated her incorrectly.
But they are counting this as a measles death, I noticed, at least in the media, the way it's being reported.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it sort of echoes the COVID era where people were, even if you got hit by a car and you tested positive for COVID, you were given a COVID death diagnosis.
So measles vaccine, you said, came out in 1963. When was it required to be given to you in school? Because I had measles as a teenager, as a young teenager. I think I was 14 at that time, And I remember I didn't like it. I was sick. I was sick for a while. You know, it wasn't fun. But I must not have had the immunization back in the day.
You may or may not have. As I said, not everyone who gets the shots actually has protection. And back in the day, it was common to get one vaccination. One vaccination, I think, gave you about 70% of the population got protection from a single vaccination. So you may have been part of the one vaccine group. Now they give two, they give it starting when you're 12 months of age. So I suspect you may have been in the one vaccine group. And so there was not herd immunity during that period of time.
But I also remember nobody panicked when I got measles either at that time.
No, it was quite common when I was a kid. Literally, we had measles parties. One kid got it, and the mothers made sure all the kids got together, so they got it done with and over. And that was just how it was. And then the thing is, when you have natural immunity to measles, it's lifelong as opposed to the vaccine immunity.
Oh. So the fact that I had a natural case of measles means that I do have good immunity for it now as an adult. Right? Is it? Doctor? Hello, doctor?
Bill.
Yes. Yeah.
Bill?
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Hang on a second. Let me put you. Phone here.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We still there now?
Yeah. Yeah, we're here.
Okay, sorry. Good. All right. I could hear you, and then apparently you couldn't hear me. What I was asking, though, is that since I had measles as a teenager, then I have good immunity for it, then, since I had it naturally at that point, right?
That's correct.
Oh, that's good.
Lifelong natural immunity.
Okay, good to know. At least I'm taking care of that. But the reason I wanted to ask you about this is that the book that you co-wrote with Dr. Jeffrey Barkey is Unavoidably Unsafe, Childhood Vaccines Reconsidered. And I wanted to go into, you know, what is the scientific backing of the childhood vaccine schedules these days? Because, and I don't want to sound like one of these boomers once again saying, hey, back when I was a kid, but I can't help it. You know, there were a handful of vaccines that I was given at that point. Like I said, certainly we all got polio at that time and may have been some other ones, but it was a very small number. And I first started discovering what was changing when I had my daughter in 1993 and then my son in 1998, that it got to the point where there was just a phalanx of it. It's almost like you just line the kid up and you shoot him full of needles at a certain point. And I'm kind of wondering what happened with this and why would you call it unavoidably unsafe where we are right now?
Well, the inflection point, Bill, was in 1986. That's when, under Reagan, actually, the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act went into effect from Congress, because the vaccine manufacturers, were screaming to Congress that they were being sued because of all the complications of the vaccines, particularly the one vaccine, the DPT at the time, actually was quite toxic, and a lot of kids had some had fatal and often lifelong injuries from that vaccine. The manufacturers were being sued, and they said, listen, we're going to stop making vaccines unless you give us protection. And so the only industry in the history of the country was indemnified in 1986 from defects in its product, and that was those were the vaccine manufacturers.
Is this why we ended up getting to the point now where there are so many more vaccines given to children than once were?
Well, just think about the business model here, Bill. If you have a product, the government indemnifies you. The government promotes you through its CDC, which spends billions of dollars promoting the use of vaccines. Schools and states mandate that the children get the vaccines in order to attend school. And the government guarantees the purchase of the vaccines for families that can't afford them. Now, that's an annuity that most manufacturers would love to have. That is the guarantees that the childhood vaccine manufacturers have. And that's why there's a scramble to get vaccines on the list, and the list continues to grow. And in fact, when I was a kid, there were 4 vaccines. There are now 17. When I was a kid, there were 11 shots you got by the time you were 18 years of age. Now there are 80. And it's all because of the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, which completely protects vaccine manufacturers if you get on that list.
Is there any evidence that our children are healthier now because of this, and that there are fewer communicable diseases, and that overall health is good in the young generation? What say you?
The short answer, Bill, is no. Again, going back in time, going back into the pre-1986 Act, 12.5% of children in this country had a chronic illness. It was extremely rare to have a child with diabetes or to have a child with rheumatoid arthritis. Now it's quite common. The chronic disease burden on our children now stands at 54%. So despite all of these, quote, improvements in healthcare delivery and vaccines, our childhood healthcare profile is declining rapidly.
Is there any evidence that would indicate that vaccines may have some role in this decline of overall health of children? And what might that be?
Well, the problem is that the burden of vaccines is a burden on the childhood immune system. Yeah, that these multiple vaccinations jack up their immune systems and distort the immune response. The good Lord made us in a really, over a couple of hundred thousand years, made us into these magnificent immunological machines where we're protected from our environment. And as children, our immune systems are trained by getting infections. What we're doing is distorting our natural response to infection. There are millions of diseases, certainly thousands of communicable diseases out there at any given time. We have vaccines now for 17 of them, and there's an unlimited list of vaccines theoretically you could produce, but it's not helping us to defend ourselves, and in fact is distorting our immune responses to our natural environment.
Are there any vaccines that you would highly recommend for people? Or do you think that is unavoidably unsafe, that no vaccines are worthy of consideration? I'm just kind of trying to plumb, you know, at what direction you come from. Are there some that you say, hey, I think this one's a good idea, the disease is serious enough, et cetera, that kind of thing?
Well, my answer for that is one of those famous it depends answers.
Oh, okay.
What we point out is that it's a risks and benefits analysis, and that's why each of the vaccines we go through, we talk about the risks and benefits. There are some children who can absolutely benefit from vaccine coverage because their immune systems have been depleted as a result of being on steroids or cancer therapies and so forth. And there are other kids who shouldn't get vaccines at all because they have sensitivities to the ingredients, or they've had the disease before, and by giving them vaccines, it can actually compromise them. So what's really important is not to treat children as if one size fits all, but rather to evaluate each of the vaccines for your child. And that's one of the things we do in the book, is we walk you through each of the vaccines and talk about the risks and benefits. And we actually have a simple scoring system we use. Parents can look at it at a glance and help to decide, along with their doctor, whether or not that vaccine makes sense.
What do you think of the modern childhood vaccinations available right now, Doctor? Which one seems to be the most difficult for many to handle, if any?
Well, what really is frightening most of us right now are the mRNA vaccines. These are vaccines that actually work unlike other vaccines ever in history. Vaccines typically have been, you take a fragment of whatever the virus or bacteria was, you make sure it's dead, but you preserve its original structure. You put that in a matrix and inject that, and it stimulates the body's immune response to that particular component of that bacteria or virus. That's called an antigen. What's happening now is that you're actually injecting genetic code into our cells, forcing the cells to produce foreign proteins. This is really genetic engineering, and it's proving to be very dangerous. And we're now finding that kids who have gotten, and adults who have gotten multiple shots of mRNA vaccines have really compromised their immune systems. They're actually more vulnerable, for example, to COVID if they've had multiple injections than if they'd never had any and just had natural immunity from infection. So these are these mRNA vaccines. I can tell you there's more than 50 more of them in the pipeline as we speak, because they're so easy for manufacturers to produce because they basically are designed in a lab on a computer.
Now, I had never heard of mRNA vaccines until the COVID shots came out a number of years ago. And how are all the vaccines now being made that way, or are we still having some which are using fragments of virus, either live virus or dead virus?
Most of the vaccines that are available still are antigen-based, that is, they're fragments of the original viruses or bacteria. But I can tell you that the pipeline is in place to replace all of or most of the current vaccines with mRNA vaccines because they're so much easier to manufacture. For example, the old vaccines, the antigen fragments, these are grown in eggs. There's a manual process where they culture in eggs and then egg yolks.
Well, no wonder eggs are so expensive, Dr. Gere.
It's another use.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right. So where should a parent, grandparent in charge of raising young people, where do we come down on something like this? Do you say no vaccines at all and you get the exemption, which you're allowed to do in Oregon for now, although every time the state legislature is in session, there are doctors in the in the legislature that are always trying to get rid of it. Every time, practically every time there's a ability to get rid of any kind of objection to this here. How should parents treat this issue?
Yeah, there's enormous pressure on doctors and legislators in the form of financial inducements, largely, and political donations in order to overturn these opt-out laws. My advice, I think this is all about, and the basis of our book is to get proper informed consent. And that is, A, I don't think there should ever be mandates for any medical product for anyone, any child, ever. Two, this really ought to be based on informed consent. Right now, as consent is assumed when you walk into a doctor's office that you're going to get the shots, we should flip that dialogue and have it be that informed consent is not assumed, that in fact there's a deliberative process. And in fact, one of the chapters of our book is how to talk to your doctor about getting proper informed consent. It's a very five-step process, very simple way. A set of questions to ask the doctor where you can arrive at a mutual decision on whether or not to vaccinate your child.
What have the successes of vaccines been? And because anytime somebody talks about it, I know RFK Jr. faced a lot of incoming, over this, over the years. And even President Trump was facing some of this, too, in an earlier iteration of Trump when he was not quite into vaccines. He was talking about autism and the baby, and you remember that speech a number of years ago. And we're told that, hey, vaccines really saved society and saved us from polio. I mean, we all got polio back when I was a kid. We all, got that, and none of us wanted to end up in an iron lung. Was it due to vaccines that this ended up being eradicated, or were there possibly other causes that people don't like to talk about?
This is really one of the most interesting stories in the history of medicine, is about polio and the, quote, eradication of polio. I've written a Substack about this quite recently, actually, that I call What About Polio? Because it's always the basis for any argument in favor of vaccine. When you actually look through the history of polio, it is really what you call a commensal organism, meaning it's an organism that we live with in our environment, been there forever. And in fact, polio outbreaks, meaning the kind of iron lung type paralysis type of outbreaks, are quite rare and unusual. They started occurring in sort of modern society, and they paralleled the introduction of pesticides, particularly in this country. The first outbreaks were in the 1890s when pesticides started being used in the greater Boston area. And then the next year, farmers up in Rutland, Vermont, started using the same pesticide. They were worried because this was the invasion of the gypsy moth, which was not endemic to this country. It came from England, and it was decimating trees and crops. They developed these very toxic arsenic-based pesticides. And lo and behold, children started getting paralyzed. Well, the paralysis that was described at the time, that we, when we go back through and look at the doctor's notes, than paralysis caused by polio. And so there's great fast forward to the 1950s. And in fact, we were already seeing a decline in paralysis and, quote, polio at the time that had peaked in the 40s from the use of DDT. I don't know if these famous fogging trucks that would drive through through town.
Oh, yeah. They drive through neighborhoods. I saw pictures, newspaper pictures of it back in the day.
Exactly. Yeah. They were spraying DDT. Everybody was exposed to DDT at the time. And DDT, finally, they realized how toxic it was. And the decline in production of DDT actually parallels the decline in polio and actually started occurring before the vaccine was ever introduced. So, in fact, I think there is great question about the benefits of the polio vaccine. Not to say polio as a disease doesn't exist. It certainly does. But there are now more cases of polio from polio vaccine than there are wild-type polio cases in this world.
Could we also be vaccinating children for supposed outbreaks of disease that are just due to weakened immune system and overall health of the child? Just curious.
Yes, of course. And in fact, the complicating factor is that the vaccines may, in fact, even be further weakening the immune capabilities of children. That's why I think Kennedy's on the right track. He's not saying don't take vaccines, mm-hmm. do take vaccines. He's saying we need long-term safety studies. There's not a single vaccine on the childhood schedule that has a long-term safety schedule. And in fact, the hepatitis B vaccine, given the day of birth to children, had 5 days of safety studies. That's completely unacceptable. It is not known how toxic that vaccine is. It contains large amounts of aluminum, a very potent neurotoxin. And what Kennedy is saying, listen, we've got the data, let's study it, and let's come to an informed decision about how safe these vaccines really are.
I'm speaking with Dr. Geer, MD, and he's a co-author of Unavoidably Unsafe Childhood Vaccines Reconsidered. Doctor, why is it that when they combine vaccines, like MMR, as an example, is the one that comes to mind for me, that they don't test it as a combination, but they only say, hey, each one is individually been tested, and they're fine. So there's no problem putting them all together. It'll be fine then, too.
Well, it is one of the things Kennedy has said he will do, is that there is no multi-vaccine testing. In other words, even if individual vaccines are tested, and even then, as I mentioned, the safety testing on these vaccines is quite limited. Combinations of vaccines aren't, and now you're up to a kid can go in for a well baby visit at 18 months of age and get 8 or 9 different vaccines. The immune systems of these young immune systems were not designed to handle this. And we are not adequately tracking the side effects of vaccine injuries that are occurring. And by the way, if they do occur and you want to get and you want to go after the manufacturer, you actually have to sue the government of the United States, and the Justice Department is their defense counsel. You go into a special vaccine court in order to sue for damages if your child is injured. That's how protected this industry is right now. And I think that those protections must be removed. They must have incentives to create a safe product.
Dr. Geer, do you have time for a couple of calls? I know you have other people to talk to. I just want to make sure I don't wear out your welcome.
Sure, I do.
Okay, great. Dr. Edward Geer with me here. Happy to take your calls. People have been holding on here for a little bit. Good morning, caller. You're on with the doctor. Who's this?
Deplorable Patrick here, Bill. And Bill, you almost answered the question I had in mind when I dialed you up, but I'm going to be specific how I phrase it. How close do you think we are to mandatory vaccines for everybody?
Well, it's an excellent question. We came very close during COVID, the whole COVID epidemic, where, in fact, in order to work, in order to enter public venues, to travel and so forth, all of a sudden we were finding all of these mandates. That fortunately has backed off, but I fear that unless we get a handle on this safety issue of vaccines, who's to say that some new administration with some new disease that's floating out there that comes out of the Wuhan lab, we're not going to see the same imposition, the same demands and requirements for vaccines. So I think we're on the knife's edge at any given time. I think it's a very dangerous edge, and I'm just hoping that we, with a fresh look at the safety of vaccines, we'll get a new perspective on these issues of mandates.
I'm speaking with Dr. Edward Gear, once again, co-author of Unavoidably Unsafe, and I'll take another call before he takes off. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Hello?
Yeah, this is Wayne, Grants Pass.
Yeah, Wayne, did you have a question about this with Dr. Gear? Go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to hear his comment. If he has a comment about all of the inoculations that are given to our military personnel when they go through basic training, they line you up, they stick a bunch of needles in your arms before you go to your first duty assignment. Has he got any comments about what the military people go through?
Wayne, it's an interesting question. Doctor, you ever looked into that?
I've looked into it to a certain extent. I can tell you, for example, that the anthrax vaccine, which was given for a number of years, was very dangerous, caused a lot of deaths, a lot of vaccine injury, and yellow fever. There's a bunch of things that you'll get depending on where you're stationed. These vaccines are highly toxic. And, of course, they all had to get the COVID vaccines. I don't even know if that's – I'm hoping that's still not a requirement. I don't think it is for the military at this point. So the point is that the military is exposed to yet a whole new set of vaccines. And, in fact, the whole Agent Orange problem out of the Vietnam War was said actually to be injuries from the anthrax vaccine and had nothing to do with the pesticide itself. I don't know one side or the other, but I'm quite concerned when I hear stories like that.
All right. One more call for Dr. Gear. Hello. You're on with Dr. Gear on KMED. Who's this?
Hello. This is Michael.
Yeah, Michael. Question for the doctor.
Yeah, I'd just like to know if there's any scientific basis for the fact that the flu disappeared the year that COVID showed up.
That's a great question. Thanks for the call.
That is a good question. First of all, it is true that when there are epidemics of certain viruses, it, quote, crowds out other viruses from infecting humans. So that is a scientific phenomenon. However, in the case of COVID, I suspect it was a lot of overdiagnosis because there were financial incentives to diagnose the COVID infection and not the flu infection. And in fact, whenever you compensate people to find something, believe me, they'll find it. So I think a lot of this was financial incentive to find COVID infection. So that you could be reimbursed at a higher rate, particularly at hospitals, so this was the case. So, A, yes, there is a scientific basis, but B, I think most of the disappearance of flu had to do with the overdiagnosis of COVID using a PCR test, which was something that was really never intended to make a diagnosis of a disease, but simply as a laboratory study way of identifying DNA sequences. So, overdiagnosis would be my diagnosis for what happened to flu during COVID.
And by the way, the title Unavoidably Unsafe, where did that come from?
Yeah, that really came from I mentioned that 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act came out of that, the legislation behind that, where it was acknowledged that, yeah, they may be unsafe. It's unavoidably unsafe. But we still, but we think the net benefit of vaccinating our kids is a good idea. Therefore, we'll accept that this product is unavoidably unsafe. It actually was then, the act was litigated in the 90s to test its whether or not, in fact, it was constitutional. And the Supreme Court ruled that it was constitutional. And it again used that term, unavoidably unsafe, in the ruling.
It is interesting, though, to be able to go to take some jobs or to go to public school, that you would be required to take something unavoidably unsafe that you couldn't really sue over. And I guess that's really why you're saying it's not that you're against vaccines, but you're saying it's like we need to have full disclosure on this. there needs to be true informed consent, and the informed is not necessarily happening. Is that your takeaway from the book overall?
That's it. Bill, if you ever got pneumonia, I should not be forced to get treated for pneumonia. Similarly, if I'm not at risk, a child is not at risk for a disease, he should not be forced to get a vaccine. And therefore, I think it ought to be based on informed consent and never be mandated.
Unavoidably Unsafe is the book, Childhood Vaccines Reconsidered. Dr. Edward Gere, co-author of that. Appreciate your insight on this, and I think it's going to be an interesting ride with Robert Kennedy Jr. in this one, in this administration.
I agree. We're all along for an interesting ride here. It'll be interesting to see. And the industry is already responding, and Bobby's already under attack. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
All right, Doctor. Good talk. Thank you for coming on the show. Be well.
Thanks, Bill. Enjoyed it.
All right. I'll put the information up on how to get the book. It's available at all the usual suspects, including their own website, too. 19 before 8 on KMED, 99.3 KBXG.
When it comes to your home, call on Stone.
Spring is a wonderful
Americans for Americans.
Hi, I'm Michael with Gage of Construction, and I'm on KMED.
I really appreciate you listening wherever you happen to be. What'd you think about the conversation with Dr. Edward Gere on the childhood vaccine schedule? Definitely looking for more informed consent. More informed consent rather than the school district or any other bureaucracy saying you shall get them. You know, when I was a kid, 1966, 1967, going into first grade. Yeah, you lined up, you got the polio shot, and I think there was polio shot, and what's the other one? Smallpox? I think you got a smallpox shot, too. The smallpox shot was the one with the gun, right? Wasn't that the one with the gun in the arm? Pretty sure. You know, left the scar. You know, we all had the scar on our arm. I can't even find mine now. But I guess finally the scar went away, or it was covered up with other scars of life. I don't know. But, you know, we didn't think too much about it, but then I only got a handful of it. And it was when my daughter ended up, wow, awful lot of shots that I've got to give this kid, right? And then my son, man, awful lot of shots that the doctor wants to give this kid at that time. And then it was my, then when my grandson got MMR, and then he ended up going downhill after that. And there were other issues going on with him, but still, it is a, you know, I've had, you know, some doubts about the way ever since the 1986 law, how it has grown and grown and grown and grown. And pretty soon you just, you know, line the kid up and you get out the vaccine machine gun. Yeah, machine guns may be banned for the populace in the United States, but they're okay for the medical world. I'm kidding. I'm just having fun. A little bit of fun with that, all right? And then there is the 150 tent minimum, and then Judge McLaughlin will take the boot off the city of Grants Pass. Then you can start enforcing some homelessness rules. What are your thoughts about that? 150. You know, the city manager of the city of Grants Pass said something I was reading in the Daily Courier. Maybe it was the RV Times. I'm not sure. But had mentioned something about wanting to have it go before a jury. To have a jury of Grants Pass residents decide what is reasonable rather than a judge. What do you think about that? That's the problem when you have the state legislature putting in weasel words such as reasonable. What is reasonable? To a progressive liberal, reasonable means that you go to the poorhouse and you're paying for lots of drunk and drug addicted and mentally ill people to continue to be drunk and mentally ill and addicted, you know, drug addicted, and nothing gets done about it. I have a feeling that a jury of a Grants Pass peers in Southern Oregon would probably have a different point of view than 150. We could talk about that and other things on your mind, too. We go to Lynn. Hello, Lynn. Always good to hear from you. What are you thinking?
Hey, Bill. Well, thanks for having the doctor on. It was excellent. I just want to say that the one point I would disagree with is I am completely against all vaccines now.
Really?
Understanding that not one of them has been properly safety tested, and they really don't know what they're doing.
Okay. How do they safety test right now? I read a lot of Substacks and a lot of articles about vaccines. Listeners send them to me all the time, and I find them quite interesting. But how do they actually test a vaccine right now? Do you know?
Well, they're all slightly different, but they have all kinds of tricks. You can read how each one is tested by reading the package inserts, which the FDA has posted. Mm-hmm. But typically, because there's no real requirements, even if they plan a long-term study, and this is what they did with the COVID shot, by the way, they always stop it early and give the shot to the placebo group. And the idea is, this is such an amazing product, it would be unethical to deprive people.
But I can see where this is going. You get rid of your control group to see what happens to them.
Right.
Right?
That's right.
Uh-huh.
So, and they have fake placebos. Not one is tested with a proper placebo. They always test against another vaccine that's supposedly been proven safe, which is the topic of the Turtles All the Way Down book.
So very often then, the way vaccine safety is tested, from what I'm hearing from you, is that you are testing against something else which hasn't been really tested all that well, rather than if you're going to test a vaccine, you should be testing against a placebo, like a saline injection, right?
Right.
Totally inert.
Completely non-reactive saline. Or they'll also have a placebo that's saline, but then they put all the excipients in, the aluminum and all the other. The only thing they take out is the antigens.
But you see, that's not a placebo.
The dangerous part.
That's not a placebo.
So it's incredibly fraudulent. It's a scam. And I just wanted to point out, Dr. Paul Thomas in Oregon commissioned a peer-reviewed study, because he did true informed consent in his practice, and he had thousands of patients. And it was published, forced to be retracted, very carefully vetted. But it showed that the more vaccines a child had, the sicker they were, and it was dose-dependent. So the healthiest kids overall were the kids who had no vaccines, and then on up. So even trying to find a middle ground is not wise. Hmm. And, of course, they stripped him of his license. His case is before the Supreme Court. I don't know if they're going to take it.
Which Supreme Court, state or federal?
The federal.
Oh, federal.
It went before the Supreme Court last week, and I think they just listened to listen to the audience.
We'll see how controlled. I know that Joel Skousen over at World Affairs Brief says that, ultimately, very few people get up to any high level in the court system or in the bureaucracy without being controlled in some form or another. That's his claim, right?
Well, and they don't want to touch the vaccine.
That's what I was worrying. We'll see. And yet, why wouldn't you want to touch the vaccine? Which tells me that, the big money may have more to say about this than I would like it to. Okay.
I'd just like to add something. There's a book out. It was out a number of years ago, and I never got around to reading it. And I wish I had, because it would have completely convinced me then. And it's called Dissolving Illusions by Suzanne Humphreys. And she's a nephrologist, I think in New Hampshire. And
No, wait a minute. Hasn't nephrology been kind of debunked? Isn't that the one about reading the bumps on the head or something like that?
No, that's a kidney specialist.
Oh, nephro. Okay, all right. So I'm mixing.
Pretty sure I have the word right. Anyway, she's a kidney specialist.
Okay.
And, so she didn't care about the childhood issue, but her kidney patients had often had a vaccine. And when she asked around the hospital, nobody would talk, and it launched her on a search. And anyway, this book, she does the whole history of vaccines, like back into like George Washington times. And it turns out that vaccines have never helped. They've always made things worse. And she's got the graphs. She's got everything to prove it. And the cause of the reduction in infectious diseases was the improvements in hygiene and overcrowding and things like that, and water.
Yeah, having a sewer system and clean water probably did more than anything. I know that some people claim that. By the way, you're right.
No, it's true.
Now, the kidney specialist, what was that name? The name of that?
Suzanne Humphreys, and I want Joe Rogan has recently had
okay.
her on his.
All right. Well, the reason
and also the high wire.
Okay, I was asking though, what type of doctor was she getting? You said kidney doctor.
She's a kidney specialist. I think it's called a nephrologist.
Okay. Now this is what I was This is what I was mistaking it for. Phrenology. Phrenology.
Oh, phrenology.
Okay. Phrenology is when you're reading the bumps on someone's head to get their mental abilities. It was very popular back in the 1800s, from what I recall. So that's what I thought you were talking about. It's like, okay, you got a head bump reader? You're talking
about
me.
Yeah.
All right. Just having fun with you, Lynn. Thanks. Let me go to the next line here. Open phones on Monday. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Hi, Bill. It's Lucretia.
Hi, Lucretia. What's on your mind, huh?
Well, Dr. Dr. Cowan and Dr. Kaufman, Bob, Dr. Sulanka is one of the top virologists in the world. And they did an experiment where, you know, most people don't know what they do is they take human kidney cells, like monkey kidney cells, then they add some nutrition, and then they add some antibiotics. And the antibiotic is really toxic on the, especially the monkey kidney cells. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they added them one at a time, nothing died. They added them all, the kidney cell, the nutrition, and the antibiotic all together, and the kidney cells died. And they said, oh, but they called the kidney cell dying was called the exosomes, the breaking up the cell, isolation. And what people were seeing is really the kidney cells dying, the exosomes from it.
Okay, and what is the point of where you're taking us through this experiment? I'm sorry, I'm just trying to get to the point of it.
Okay, so the point is they also sent these to labs. And like the guy said, if you give them something to find, they sent it to labs and said, is there any SARS-CoV-2 virus in this? And they said there was, and there was never anything added like that. They said there was measles. They said there was HIV virus in there. They never added anything. And on top of that, what they're doing is that's not isolation when you add other things like this. The studies that was done in 1920, 29 after the Spanish flu where they put 100 guys in a room with 19 sick guys just coughing, sneezing. They would inject the sputum from the other guy's nose up their nose. They would have them eat out of the same spoon. They'd have them sneeze on them, cough on them. They'll sneeze on them. Nobody got sick.
Well, that could be because they had higher immune process here, too. Not everybody always gets sick being exposed. But still, I do find it interesting, though, that part about nothing added to the sample, but then the lab finds something that wasn't added to the sample. And that is very interesting about, you know, even the doctor that I was talking to, Dr. Geer, a little while ago, talking about if there is a real big financial incentive to... Right. To be diagnosed with something like that, then they will find a way to diagnose you with it. Hey, appreciate the call, Lucretia, 770-5633. Just had a little fun noodling around the news this morning. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, who's this?
Good morning, Bill. It's Francine.
Hello, Francine.
Hi. Well, I'm going to cover two topics here at once.
Okay, try not to confuse me too much because I'm only kind of a linear thinking guy at the moment.
I know, Bill. You're too close to that X generation, you know. It's okay. So you started out this morning talking about this. There was some kind of hubbub about Trump talking about forcing the homeless people. They go into camps and they get forced to clean up their act.
Yeah, they get forced treatment on alcoholism and also... drug addiction and mental illness. In other words, we're not just going to put you in a camp and keep you going. We want you to actually get better.
Right. Which to me, I mean, I'm hearing like, you know, Chinese music in the background, but you know, communist Chinese music. But anyways, okay. So with the childhood vaccine schedule, you know how you have to really work. A parent has to work really hard to figure out how to get an exemption for their children because it's kind of mandatory, not totally, but you know, pretty much. And so what is the difference, you know, between when they force people to go into rehab or they force children to get vaccinated? And the point I'm trying to make here is that this is what's happening in our society. We are getting to a place where we're having government forcing us to do all kinds of things that are very personal and involve our own personal health and our bodies and our minds.
And I agree. And that's why I have some, it gives me some pause too, because I could see a future administration that would look at the way that I think or you think or the way Lucretia thinks or anybody else that might call the show. As you know, there's a little bit of mental illness here going on with you, and you know, for your social credit score to keep up, that you need to have some treatment, right?
Right. So this is a serious concern.
But at the same time, when you have people who claim a right to just set up shop and camp wherever, according to you know appointed and then maybe elected judges here in Southern Oregon. How does society end up defending itself? What do you think?
And at the same time, you know, you got me thinking when you said set up shop. Okay, At the same time, people who want to start a business, which I know this is one of your beefs, you know, like with the bakeries and stuff,
mm-hmm, right?
They're not allowed to just do that. They can't just set up a business, but the homeless can go plop down anywhere they want, kind of, or they have been able to.
You know, up until the rise of the homeless class of folks here, no one would have ever considered there being any kind of problem with me. Hey, I just want to pull the van again into the middle of Riverside Park, and I'm just going to sit there, and I'm just going to park. You can't do nothing to me. Never would have thought that, right? Right?
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're heading there's a lot of things that are leading us in a very dangerous direction these days, and it is very concerning.
All right. I appreciate your call, as always. Thank you, Francine. I'll take one more call, and then we'll break for news. You know me, I'm always running late. That's just the way it goes. You know, you start talking with people, you're having fun. Good talk. Who's this? Good morning. Welcome.
This is Miner Dave.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, I want to do something fun. How about Johnny Rivers and Secret Agent Man? I was flipping through YouTube and I found that. I thought it might be interesting because of all the secret agents around.
Huh. Okay. I can do that.
Yeah.
Are you bopping now, buddy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dancing, I really like
dancing
that
in
song.
The cage.
A man who leads a life of danger.
Always loved Johnny Rivers. I'm with you on that one, Miner Dave. Yeah.
Thank
you. He's now no longer touring at this point. Finally retired. I think he's like 83 now. And so many artists that he was involved with, and Soul City Records, of course, he founded that. Fifth Dimension, I think, was a big part of that. Bones Howell, the famous record producer. They all worked together. Just good, good stuff. Anyway, we'll talk more. It's a minute after 8. KMED and KMED HD1. Eagle Point, Medford. KBXG, Grants Pass.
Beware of pretty faces.
You're